Tina's got a crush on the Wicked Witch of Springwood.
She is bad news at 6 and 11.
And tonight he may score.
This is gonna be the stuff dreams are made of.
But she already has a boyfriend.
Naughty.
And he's the jealous type.
There are some girls you just shouldn't go to pieces over.
On the next Freddy's Nightmare.
Well, welcome, my friends, to Welcome to Primetime, Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I am your host, Enrique Couto, here with Double D, Louis DeNoyer.
Hello.
And for those of you who happen to be on our Patreon, you are seeing me, and to a lesser extent, David. And this is going to be great. We're ending the final episode of season one.
Yes,
with me doing the show where I'm running the soundboard and a video board,
and doing so well so far.
I've done three. Well, does that count when I messed up at the beginning twice?
I think we can count that.
Okay, I edited it out. I'm sure nobody will ever see it, but I'll know it's there, and I'll always be that failure in my life. But but we're here in the new studio space, and if you want to watch us instead of just listening to us, you can go to freddysnightmares.com and click on Patreon, and for as little as $2 a month, you can watch the live recording,
yes.
On video, and we are not slumming it.
No.
We have three cameras showing us, and I'm pretty happy about it.
Oh, yeah.
So unfortunately we have Dave here, we do have our setup already. See, I'm already getting distracted by doing it. And the only negative is I talked to a lawyer.
Yes.
And friggin' Warner Brothers is not having it if Freddie shows up on here, because he's under contract.
Okay.
We'll manage it. Usually Freddie steals my mic anyway, so it'll be no problem.
It'll work itself.
So today, big deal. First of all, if you didn't listen to last week's show, what is wrong with you? We had James Cappy on, and he was an incredible, incredible interview. He's done films like, he wrote The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. He wrote two episodes of Freddy's Nightmares. Along with his good buddy Fred Decker.
Yes,
and
he did.
And it was an incredible, incredible interview. It was so full of fascinating information.
Yeah.
And the thing we weren't expecting on this show was to have people who worked on the show give a crap about the fact that we're doing this show and actually write in and say, like, wow, it's really cool what you guys are doing. Because, I mean, I'm used to being the guy who appreciates things nobody else appreciates. But it was a pretty awesome experience. So if you didn't listen to James Cappy's interview last week, stop this.
Yes.
And, well, stop this, get a condom. That'll come in later. Stop this. And actually, you should stop this and get a condom regardless.
Regardless, yes.
But stop this and then head over to the podcast feed and give James Cappy's episode a listen. It really is excellent.
Yeah.
And it's a great story about how your career can start as innocuously as on a show that everyone assumed everyone would forget.
Yeah.
And
not to mention, I mean, all the connections he had that he was sharing with us, and just how things unrolled was the word I didn't want to use, but that's the word I'm going
unrolled?
To use. Unrolled?
Why not? If they've been listening for over 26 weeks that we've been doing this show,
yeah,
then they already know you don't speak English.
Oh, I'm stupid.
So
I'm quite stupid.
Well, you're dumb as a box of fuck.
A box of fuck.
I was going to say box of rocks, and I changed it right at the last second.
That's fair.
Even I was surprised. And we want to say that real quick, because even though we're not, the show has another 22 episodes to go, we have been doing this show every week without fail.
Yes, we have.
With a lot of fail. We're at like 20, because we had a couple of bonus episodes.
Yeah,
like
about 24, 25 weeks.
That we've been doing this every week.
Yes.
And believe me, there have been times I would not hate taking a break, but I have not.
No, we have not.
And it's been a challenge, to say the least. But I do enjoy this. And you want to talk about, on a day that I was exhausted, on a day that I wasn't sure I wanted to record, and a day I wasn't sure I could sit down and write out my notes, they gave us safe sex.
Oh, safe
and,
sex.
And boy, yeah. That was not work. That was play.
They saved the sleaziest for last, and we thank them for that, because my God, this episode, and we'll get there, mm-hmm. but this episode goes places.
I mean, it goes a lot of places.
A lot of places.
And crevices.
Crevices, indeed. And I know we've teased it already, but for those who are aware, Safe Sex did have about 8 minutes edited out of its initial broadcast. And there is an extended cut floating around that we may or may not have gotten a hold of.
I don't know how would that have happened.
I don't know how that would have happened either. So we may or may not be releasing a bonus episode in the near future going over the extended cut, because boy howdy.
Would you say it's a little bit bloodier?
I would say it's a little bit bloodier. I would say it's a little more sexual filled in regards of, you know, just
David,
just the execution
David,
scenes.
David.
Yes.
The lawyer said you're not allowed to say sex and filled in the same sentence anymore because you know what happened last time.
I don't want to go there.
No, that's what the lawyer doesn't want either. So, no, this is a really fun episode,
but really I
just wanted to wax nostalgic for a minute about the fact that we've done so many episodes.
Yes, and I'm so grateful that you threw out this idea, for one, because initially, you know, when we suggested this, or when you suggested this, it was kind of just us recapping it to be able to have more of an experience watching it rather than us just binging it.
It was so that we would actually watch all yes. of it and commit, because we knew... When you go into a show that has this amount of episodes, 22 episodes per season, which is the old school television methodology,
yeah.
what happens is you end up realizing that it's a big undertaking. Like, we could spend an entire Saturday and Sunday doing it, and yes. we would not have been halfway through.
No.
We wouldn't have even been, we may have been a fourth of the way through if we really dedicated ourselves.
When we do TV show binges, usually we get about 6 or 7 episodes in, and then we call a break at that point, and either we come back for another time, because we did that with Friday the 13th, the series. When we were watching House of Cards together, we did it that way.
Oh, yeah, too many vetoes. Hey! Anyway. But no, so that was kind of my thought, is, and also you were kind of jonesing to podcast.
Yes.
And I was not, because I podcast most of my week.
You do. You're a very dedicated podcaster.
I haven't missed an episode of Weekly Spooky in 183 episodes.
We're all proud of you. All of us.
That makes no difference to me. But no, I haven't missed a Weekly Spooky. We haven't missed a week of this.
Yes.
Even though we postponed recording this week because yeah. it's just, well, and you weren't feeling well.
I was not. So I had a migraine.
Nobody cares. I cut away from you. So, but no, Dave wasn't feeling well. So with that all being said, remember, if you're listening to this for the first time and you want to watch this episode, it is available to stream free on Tubi TV.
Yes, it is.
In the United States of America, as our wonderful Canadian friends have made very clear.
Yes, they have.
It's very available in the US of A, because, well,
that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
We have always been good about propping up our child murderers. Oh, I thought the show was going to stop when I said that. Okay. I guess the CIA has been slacking.
We're good. No, we're good.
Billy at the CIA must be napping. But yeah, so Tubi TV, you can take a look at this. This is season 1, episode 22, Safe Sex. And now, David, why don't you give us the rundown on Safe Sex?
I will gladly do so.
Wait, whoa. There's a sentence.
Oh.
I never thought I was going to say out loud. Yeah, hey, Dave, let's give us a rundown. Do you actually know, like, off the top of your head, all the STDs you got in college?
What
or
the
do you
hell?
Have to, or do you have, like, a piece of paper stuffed under your mattress with them in there?
I plead the fifth.
But no, Dave, give us the rundown on this episode.
So we are talking about season 1, episode 22. The original air date of this episode is May 28th or 29, 1989. This episode was directed by Gerald T. Olson. This is his directorial debut, but he was a second unit director on Malibu Beach in 1978. He did also Shoot the Sundown, which is a Western that I've seen with Christopher Walken, and I'm blanking on the other person that he did in 78 as well. Rock and Roll High School in 79. He also did Rapid Fire, Dumb and Dumber, and to make it even more special, he was the producer on 1981's Bloody Birthday.
Wow, Bloody Birthday, okay.
The Slayer in 1982.
What was his name again?
Gerald T. Olson.
because I've watched The Slayer and all the extras.
Yeah.
And that was a really interesting creation. It's fun.
It's fun, yeah. And to make it even better, Henrik, not only did he do The Hidden in 1987, but in 1991, he did a little film called Big Girls Don't Cry, They Get Even.
As director?
As the producer.
Producer? Well, that makes sense because that's a New Line film.
Yes.
So we probably got into the New Line good graces. But then he like accidentally ate Bob Shea's pasta out of the fridge and he was like, you're going to Freddy's Nightmares.
And in 87, to bring it all back around, he was the production manager on Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he was definitely a stalwart of the New Line team at that time.
When I pulled up his resume, I couldn't believe everything he had. And then to make it even more special, the writer on this episode is David J. Scow. Of course, he wrote...
He's a legend in this business.
Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw 3 in 1990. He was the writer on Critters 3, The Crow in 94. Damn it, I knew you were going to do that.
Wait. You mean one of the like coolest movies of all time?
Yes.
Like, it like inspired an entire generation of kids.
That is correct.
Critters is excellent.
Oh my God.
Dave loves The Crow because he's like that guy in the South Park skit. It's like, he's going to dress up like The Crow so he can be sexy and everything.
Burn down, Hot Topic. And then to bring it back around again, one of my personal favorites, he did the teleplay for a movie I actually showed Henrik a while back, The Hills Run Red in 2009.
Oh, he did Dave Park? Oh, yeah, of course. Dave and he are buddies. Yep. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then also, he was a writer of many novels, at least 12 from 88, and recently actually released one in 2019. So he's still writing to this day. He actually just did a signing recently with Mick Garris.
Isn't he considered like one of the fathers of splatterpunk?
Splatterpunk, yes. He is the godfather of splatterpunk, or the father of splatterpunk.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because he didn't, and he wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
Yes,
right?
He did. He uncredited on that on IMDb at least, but yes, he did contribute to that. See, and I think part
reason,
6.
And the reason I know he wrote a draft of 6.
Yeah.
But the reason I know he worked on 5 is because my knowledge of who wrote that is based on the documentary, not on the credits. So
that is such a good documentary.
But this is quite a pedigree,
yes,
of people. And I love Hollywood because in the 22 episodes that we've looked at, we've had people who turned out to work on every movie I love.
Yes.
Including Mio and the Land of Faraway.
Even though Dave forgot it.
And Theodore Rex.
Theodore Rex. Which multiple times.
I'm going on our buddy Mike Eshkewi's podcast to talk about Theodore Rex.
No shit.
Yeah, so I'll be revisiting it this weekend.
Oh, I can't wait
for
that.
Yeah, that's going to be great. After such a bad week, I get to watch Whoopi Goldberg in a dinosaur, but not The View.
It's a usually fun. Oh, my God. What? I was not ready for that.
No one was. Theodore Rex, the movie that I thought I imagined.
Yes.
Like, I thought I was watching HBO and, like, half asleep and dreamt Theodore Rex. But then we end up at Good Girls Don't Cry, They Get Even, which is honestly one of my favorite movies.
And people may not know it by that title, but if you by chance owned the VHS of New Line's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Which I did.
I did too. It had the trailer on it as the movie Step Kids.
Step Kids. Yeah. It was Step Kids, not Step Family?
Step Kids.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that trailer because I never was able to find that movie. And then one day I'm flipping through cable like 6 years later. I'm like 18 years old because I, of course, living at home. Why would I have cable? I'm an elder millennial. I cut that cord. Oh, it was that's actually a really great movie. I have the DVD.
And you have a poster.
And the poster from the Czech Republic because that was the only place I could find a poster. So anyway, we've gotten our nerd on,
yes. Super,
but this, so needless to say, this episode, quite a movie and horror movie pedigree.
Yes.
And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, and does Scow write any more of the series or is this it?
This is the only one I think that I saw him on. I'll double check it.
Of course. We'll know eventually.
Yeah. Obviously, I'll double check it, of course. But yeah, I think this is the only one that I really saw him on. But, getting into the episode now.
Oh boy, here we go.
Here we go. So the episode opens as we see familiar exterior of Springwood Mental Hospital. We enter to see a young man sitting on a couch while a therapist sits behind him looking over. Dana, who is played by Andrew Woodworth, he was in Ernest Goes to Camp in 87.
Wow.
No, just wait.
I rest my case of the connections we've made.
Just wait. That is not the first time we're going to mention that particular film this episode.
I'm in.
So Ghost in the Machine in 93. Dana sighs to his doctor, who is Dr. DeVries. He's played by Jake Jacobs. He was on Murder, She Wrote.
Whoa. Jake Jacobs?
Jake Jacobs.
So you forgot to write it down and just making just it up making right now? Okay, up. Yeah. Good. That makes sense.
He was on Murder, She Wrote. He was in Nightmare on Elm Street 5. Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge.
Wait, who did he play in NOS 5?
He was it was just a bit role. I'm thinking he was in The Dinner Party because it was one of those.
Oh, wasn't there somebody else in that Dinner Party as well?
That we talked about recently too. Yeah.
That makes sense. And, they were like, hey, you're SAG, but you're cheap, right?
He Hop also on board. Did a movie that I'm curious about called Driven to Kill, which sounds pretty good, too.
Driven to Kill.
Driven
okay.
to Kill.
Okay,
so
I like that.
Dr. DeVries tells Dana that he can talk to him or don't talk to him, but why does he bother making these sessions when he won't talk to him? Dana tells him it's not that he's sure how he's expected to talk about things that are inside his head. It can't be easy. Dr. DeVries tells him sometimes he needs courage and helps to open him up. The doctor asks Dana if he would mind smoking, and Dana tells him, yeah, but then adds, he doesn't mind, but reminds the doctor it's not good for him.
I am so glad somebody else answers wrong when somebody says, do you mind? I go, yes. No, I don't mind, actually. Please. That's actually, this is a pro tip for any of you young people who need a role model. Obviously, I'm the only option.
Clearly, yes.
And if someone says, do you mind, and you don't want to fuck up, say, please.
Please.
Please is a great way. Please. Because think about it. I mean, if you don't want them to do something, your tone of voice will get them.
Yeah.
If they say, do you mind, you'd be like, no. They'll be like, oh, shit. Okay. But if you say, do you mind, you get please. Then they're going to take it as a yes. You never hear please as something mean.
No, you don't.
Like, you never see somebody go, oh, David, please. And then he's just motioning to a sign that says, fuck yourself.
It reminds me of Dimitri Martin had that show Important Things on Comedy Central for a while. And at the end of the episode, he would do like wordplay and stuff. And he said the number one word that people use when they want to be dicks is nope. Because every time somebody says nope, it's never in a kindness. It's like, hey, do you have this? Nope. It's not. Unfortunately, nope.
Hey, did you find the body of my mother? Nope.
Nope. So he asks him if he can smoke. Dana says, yeah, sure, that's fine. But he reminds him that smoking is not good for him. This makes Dr. DeVries have second thought, and he puts the smokes back in his jacket. The doctor tries to comfort Dana by telling him that he sees a specialist himself, which shocks Dana.
He says he sees an analyst.
An analyst,
because
excuse
this
me.
Is the good old days when we called therapists analysts. And I miss that, because whenever I hear someone call a therapist an analyst, I immediately imagine that I'm in a Woody Allen movie from the 70s.
I can see that.
I was talking to my analyst. It's always, I was talking to my analyst.
Bitch. So DeVries goes on to tell Dana that everyone suffers from problems, but shining a light on them can help them to cease to be problems. Coaxing Dana to open up again, adding, I promise I won't laugh. Dana silently remarks, don't be too sure, and begins to tell the doctor that he's attracted to the non-next girl type of women.
Oh, yeah, which is shocking. Because and of course, you know, this way out there girl is not in the least attractive on the show, right? No. She's the worst. Yeah.
And that brings us to what I could only write down as what I wrote, a bitchin' guitar riff, because the music in this episode, I mean, between the guitar riff and the saxophone solo, well, it sounded like
it
Lethal Weapon.
It should have said that in the closed captioning or else it was lying. It says bitchin' guitar riff. Yeah.
It brings us to another familiar exterior as we are outside Springwood High School. We then see Dana and his buddy Nicholas, played by Patrick Day, who was also in Ernest Goes to Camp.
Yes!
Shadow of Obsession in 94, ooh. JAG, and
whoa,
recently...
Whoa. Shadow of Obsession. Is that an erotic thriller?
It looked like
nice.
It, yes.
I mean, that was the era of the erotic thriller, the early 90s 100%. And stuff like that. Yeah, that's when you had movies like Nightshade and Over the Wire.
Cold Sweat.
I love Cold Sweat.
It's good.
Cyber sex. That one had Jeff Fahey in it. It was
strip
really
teaser.
Strip teaser, so so good. And if you think, just know anybody who's like, wow, he likes dumb movies like Strip Teaser. Well, listen, Mother Hubbard. First of all, it's a great film.
Yes.
Second of all, the director of Strip Teaser has donated to my Chicano Cancer
he
Fund.
He has indeed.
My dog Chicano's Cancer Fund. He's a good man. and I love him.
So going back to Patrick Day real quick, most recently he was in Dahmer, the monster series on Netflix. He played the chaplain in 2 episodes.
Okay.
So that's where, because I recognize him a little bit. So Nicholas is walking through the school library with Dana. The two repeatedly bump into spinners packed with books, trying to sneak through and catch a glimpse of the infamous goth girl, Caitlin, who is played by Devon Pierce. She was in Twilight Zone in 86, a movie called The All-Nighter in 87, did 37 episodes of The Young and the Restless, but she was Miss Teen USA in 1983.
Wait, she was the actual Miss Teen USA?
Miss Teen USA in 1983.
Okay, it wasn't like a movie.
No.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, and okay. I can see it.
I mean, you...
yeah, so no, Caitlin, go ahead.
I wanted to point out, though, this show, it's getting into kind of uncomfortable territory because I just realized that as he's talking to this therapist, his main problem is a woman.
Yeah.
And I don't appreciate the show being realistic. I thought this was supposed to be nonfiction, but he's in a therapist. He's like, it's all about women. That's fair enough. And I do like how on the couch, he kind of looks like a kind of an every dude.
Yeah.
But then the second they cut to him in the library, he's just wearing those Jeffrey Dahmer glasses.
He's a Melvin.
Oh, which, by the way, with those glasses, how could she not dig him?
Oh, my God.
She's like, she just looks him up and down. She's like, you look like you know how to cook. Anyway.
Oh, God. So Caitlin picks a large book off the shelf and begins to read it while Dana calls her a stone-cold fox. Nicholas tries to make jokes calling her the Wicked Witch of the Midwest and states that rumors say she's into Satanism and doesn't own one piece of clothing that isn't black.
Well, hell.
Caitlin, decked out in full black, sits at a table in the library thumbing through a book as Dana wonders what she's reading, but is answered by Nicholas, who comments, probably Jack the Ripper's bedtime stories. Pushed out from behind the spinner by Nick, Dana approaches Caitlin with an, oh, hi. Caitlin doesn't look up until he says her name, causing her to look at him with a disgusted look as he continues, come to the library often?
Which is solid.
That is solid.
Well, no, because, you know, the pickup line is supposed to be, hey, do you come here often? Do you want to?
Oh, man.
What?
I mean, that they did play with that, and we'll get to that later in the episode,
too. We get some really good pickup lines.
Oh, my God, we do.
This episode is really just a dating manual.
Oh, yeah.
So, but, yeah, go on, Dubby.
So she immediately looks back up and down over Dana, asking, who are you? Dana fumbles saying his name until Nick pipes up, stating that his name is Dana, adding that he was just admiring your costuming. The two,
which is not at all insulting.
Not at all. No, and that's not one of many that he's about to throw out or anything. The two look down at the book, noticing that Caitlin is reading about Fred Krueger, which, by the way, what fucking book is this in the high school library that has Fred Krueger in it?
I was wondering that. And also, who wrote that so fast?
Yeah.
Didn't he just get burned? I mean, although they never established a timeline of, like, that episode could have taken place 10 years earlier.
Very well.
And then we just bump back up to Sister's Keeper and stuff like that. That's why I'm putting you on this, David.
Okay.
I'm going to get you about 50 pieces of poster board.
Okay.
I need you to come up with a accurate timeline. And if you don't, I got one of those dog shock collars. I would never put it on a dog. It's for you.
Just for me.
Yeah, of
course.
Just
for me.
Of course.
So the two look down at the book, noticing that Caitlin's reading about Fred Krueger. Nick comments, oh, Freddy Krueger, huh? You doing a report or something? Which, again, what report would that be for the school would allow?
I mean, I guess he was just hoping she wasn't a fucking nightmare, you know?
I guess. Caitlin responds with no, asking what do they want, but Nick goes on to ask why she's reading about a creep like Freddy then. Caitlin tells both guys, Freddy Krueger was a god. He understood things.
Well, Freddy would agree with that.
Yes,
I mean,
he
did refer to his glove as God in the first movie. But I just want to say, thank God modern women aren't obsessed with serial killers, because that is such a weird, unattractive look. Women and crimes that are true. Woo! Glad that bullet's been dodged.
Thank God
by
there's
society.
No podcast on true crime or anything.
No, or television series,
television
or Netflix
series.
Limited series every week released.
Zanga pages.
Zanga. Zanga.
You heard me.
I that's the problem.
So Caitlin tells both guys, Freddy Krueger was a god. He understood things. I wouldn't expect anybody your age to get it.
Oh, snap.
Fed up with her response, Nick lays into her mocking, our age, huh? Adding that Freddy Krueger was Springwood's biggest closet skeleton who killed I don't know how many.
I thought he was going to say biggest closet case, and it was about to get really homophobic. I'm not even joking. I was like, Freddy Krueger was a gay guy. I'm I'm not joking. That's what I thought they were going with.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
You could see the homophobia.
No, I didn't necessarily
Dave,
see the homophobia.
Well, yeah, you can.
I mean,
is that what you're trying
it's
to
It's the 80s. They did get away with a lot of stuff.
It's the 80s, right?
Adding that Freddy Krueger was Springwood's biggest closet skeleton who killed I don't know how many. Caitlin interrupts, stating again, like she said, she wouldn't expect them to get it. Dana tells Nick to lighten up as Nick calls Caitlin Miss Nuvo Gravo Wavo and continues calling Freddy a glazed dog nut and stating that Caitlin thinks he was some kind of hero, mocking her, adding, look at what all he did for charity. Freddy's kids. Which I did love.
A glazed dog nut.
A glazed dog nut.
Back to you, David.
Back to me. All right. So Caitlin thinks that he was some kind of mocking her, that thinks he was some kind of hero, mocking her, adding, look at all he did for charity, Freddy's kids. Dana tells him to chill out, defending her, stating it's probably for some class. Caitlin adds, as if it's any of your business. Nick goes on mocking and stating it's for lifestyle of the dead and perverted.
This guy's my kind of guy.
He's got some zingers. Caitlin looks over to Dana, asking him if his friend's mommy always lets him out without a leash, before excusing herself and leaving the two, while Dana tries to apologize for Nick, who in turn breaks out into a tune, stating to the library loudly, she's hot for Freddy, she's hot for Freddy. The library shushes Nick while Dana pushes him, calling him a dweeb and moving past as the two exit the library. Nick goes on mocking her, still adding he's seen this before, like a typical junior hung on a senior syndrome. Dana tells her she's gorgeous, but Nick argues she's bad news at 6 and 11.
Which I am adding to my repertoire. Like that's that. A good one. She's bad news at 6 and 11. Nice.
Dana questions why did he even walk up to her, and Nick walks him out, adding, face it, Dana, the Wicked Witch of the West has got you under her spell, and does a funny evil laugh, of course. The camera then pans over to books in the library as the music box tune begins, and suddenly books are pushed aside by a familiar glove as we see Freddy, who states, knowledge is power, but there are some girls you shouldn't go to pieces over.
And I have to say, I would take any dating advice Freddy is willing to offer.
He's got plenty.
That's just my personal opinion. I feel like Freddy Krueger, sometimes when he's doing these pieces, he should have to turn to the camera and be like, not legal advice. And then like,
and then it goes into
thing.
It.
So, before we go any further,
yes.
Dave, are we just going to sit here and pretend this woman isn't exactly your type? Or
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Why would I bring that up?
Born under a Hot Topic moon is what you've normally, you know, mocked me with.
Mocked? You mean explained?
Stated.
Like shown? It's like me holding up a mirror and you going, look at that fucking asshole. It's like, David, bad news. That's you.
For the record, yes, I did find Caitlin quite attractive.
Well, because you have a goddamn pulse, but I mean, this whole, like, wearing the hair and the black, and then like, I like death, and you're like, ooh, this is a very exciting mistake for me, double D, David.
I knew we were not going to get in through this episode without that being brought up, so now that we have.
Because it's a woman that looks exactly like a woman you would date.
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, I can't be held responsible for that.
I mean, yes, that's true too.
So I just wanted to point that out, get that out of our systems, and now we can move on.
And now back to
See,
Freddy's
it's
nightmares.
Therapy. It's
there we
therapy.
Go. We're just getting it out in the air.
Yeah.
So back in Dr. DeVry's office, Dana sits while the doctor asks him what he thinks attracted him to a girl like Caitlin. Dana answers that he doesn't know, but he feels at the mercy of his teenage hormones. He adds that she's mysterious and hard to get. He doesn't want things to come easy, so DeVry tells him that this isn't possession that they're talking about, and asks him if he fantasizes about winning her somehow. Dana states that he does in the chivalry sense, but he spends more time dreaming about her than he does thinking about her while he's awake.
Hey, Dave, though, do you know how to make a hormone?
How?
You don't pair.
Well done.
I would never make that joke if I didn't have the sad trombone.
That's fair. DeVry asks if the dreams are enjoyable, and Dana says they are to a point, but they always get really weirded out. We cut then to a shot of Caitlin, who's walking in an atmosphere not unlike Freddy's domain. She calls out for Dana, looking around concerned. She comes to a mortuary-like setting where she runs into Dana, also dressed in all black now.
Ooh.
Caitlin tells him that he's after me. Dana questions who, but Caitlin responds with, you know, him, Freddy.
Freddy. Well, let's say it together. Freddy.
Dana pulls her away, telling her that he'll get her out, pulling her away boards on the wall. He helps Caitlin through the hole that he's just made into a garishly green-lit room. Dana stares into the wall, calling to Caitlin as he begins to hear her call to him. Dana begins to ask if it's her when suddenly Freddy lunges out, grabbing onto his throat, commenting, "Naughty, naughty, sneaking Sally to the graveyard, huh?" He groans as he pulls Dana in closer before the screen cuts to black.
Well, of course it does. Because why wouldn't it?
Sneaking Sally to the graveyard.
I thought it was sneaking Sally through the graveyard. Maybe it was something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever Tubi's caption said or what I read.
Well, I hadn't turned on the captions yet.
Oh, you hadn't?
Not yet. No, but I did the next time Freddy talks. Yeah, I did not know what he was saying.
We see the exterior of Dana's house, which also was Blocker's residence from episode one, if you noticed.
Ooh.
They used it again.
Okay.
So clearly that house just keeps going through.
Real estate in Springwood is a booming, kids.
He's clearly in his room having a nightmare. He awakens and looks at the clock, commenting he only has 5 minutes till first period. He stops and looks into the mirror, noticing a huge red mark on his neck, which happens to be in the exact spot that Freddy grabbed him in the dream. He touches it while breathing heavy and then wipes sweat from his brow. We're now back in Dr. DeVry's office. He asks Dana if he ever talks about any of these dreams with these friends. Dana tells him he's tried with Nick, but talking sex stuff with teenage boys isn't easy. I love that line.
I like that too, because the guy's like, "Oh, I talk about sex with children all the time. It's okay. I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Outside Springwood High, Dana and Nick are walking out as Dana tells him about his dreams, specifically how real it felt when Freddy grabbed his neck. Joking, Nick says he can see the headlines now: Springwood dork strangled by homicidal headphones. Dana asks him to get off his back, but Nick says that getting off his back isn't the problem. Getting what's her name over there on her back is.
Now, I want to point out.
Yes.
For a moment, if I may, David.
Yes.
This guy, definitely my kind of character. But the only thing that kind of gets to me is I don't really like the idea of like constantly needling your friend. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's your best friend, would you insult him all the time? Mm-hmm. Would you constantly skewer the things he's saying to make them sound like something else? Would you make fun of the things he holds dear that are important to him? No, you wouldn't do that to a best friend. You would do that to like somebody you don't like a real sack of shit, you know, like a real fucking planner's word on Hitler's dick kind of guy, you know, but like a friend, no, you would just be kind and supportive.
100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's the only part I don't really get about him, is why he'd be like that.
you. So he motions to Caitlin, who sits in the schoolyard sketching. Dana tells Nick he thought he said he didn't like her, but Nick adds he never said that. She's just on another planet. Then he comments that her silhouette never lies, making moves with his hands and also doing a French accent. Did you notice? So Dana tells Nick he thought he said he didn't like her. He comments that her silhouette never lies, making moves with his hands. Nick then tells Dana he has exactly what he needs, having him handing him a bright pink book with black writing on it that says how boys can pick up girls as a bitchin' saxophone riff, not unlike the Lethal Weapons theme plays.
Yeah, so there were two musical cues that made me think of other movies.
Yeah.
There was that one that made me think of Lethal Weapon, and then there was which may have been the ghost of Jerry Silver, you know, just like, that's his name, right? Jerry Silver?
Jerry Goldsboro.
Jerry.
Or, well, shit.
Wait, who did I said the wrong name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Oh, well.
Clapton technically did Lethal Weapon.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my point is.
Yes.
Shut up. No, no, my point is, the other one was, there's like this, this diddling, diddling, diddling.
Yeah.
That really reminded me of Back to the Future.
I could see that.
And I think we've heard that before in the series,
because
I feel like I've mentioned before, like, some of these sound like Back to the Future cues.
Yes, they do.
And that one definitely did.
Well, and the one that we'll get to here in a second, when Nick has the dream with him and Caitlin, when the wheel spins, that theme reminded me of something, and I cannot remember for the life of me what it was, but I was just like, this music is so awesome.
Well, it's not in my notes, so I have no help for you.
That's fair. So Dana reluctantly takes the book, asking him if this is where he gets all his sex expertise, adding that he doubts Nick has actually ever done it. Nick argues that of course he's done it, but backtracks, stating he has gone all the way, but not strictly technically.
Yeah, well, what is the term he uses? Did you write it down?
He says not strictly technically, everything but the act, adding that Suki let him perform a tactical R&R on her once.
So
kind
I
of
googled that.
Yes. Please go on.
I googled tactical R ampersand R,
yes,
and tactical
R&R.
I mean, I found a lot of army surplus stores.
Yes.
So then I did what any elder millennial would do. I typed it into Urban Dictionary. Nothing. So I want to make it clear, I am no closer to knowing what the hell that, that means is. Now than I ever was before.
And with that said, we don't know if we ever will.
Well, oh, no, there's no way we ever will. I mean, I guess we could ask David Scow.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't know if we could have two Davids at once on the show.
Oh, I think we could.
That's devastating. Well, no, you're right. We'd have one David and one Louis.
Hey.
It hurts his feelings.
And you own the first time you said it this episode, I'm proud of you. It took this long.
I introduced you as Louis DeNoyer.
Did you?
I called you Double D Louis DeNoyer.
Oh, that's damn
it. It's called a fake out because I know you only half listen and with your butthole and not your ears.
Dick. Dana reads the back, which states, ultimate turn on tax to make her your slave. And Nyx adds, it's a very good book. Read it for Betty by time. Nyx says bye to Dana as he asks where he's going. And Nyx says that Suki is working at Cheesy Boy.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's going to go over there and tear him off a piece of pizza.
Get your minds out of the gutter, Freddy's Nightmare Watchers. Jeez.
Dana laughs, asking, Suki, Nicholas, isn't she the one who chews watermelon bubblegum? Which I don't know what they have against
what
watermelon
bubblegum. Yeah, I have it right here. What's wrong with watermelon bubblegum? I guess that's Suki's big move.
I guess so.
It's like, oh,
well, because Caitlin brings it up, too, at one point.
Yeah, no, I don't know what it is about watermelon bubblegum. Maybe it's, I mean, he said watermelon bubblegum, and he said, woof.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a huge fan of watermelon bubblegum. I'm not like hunting down watermelon bubblegum. This is the most I've ever said watermelon bubblegum, but your guess is as good as mine.
So he tells
tactical R&R.
Tactical R&R. Nyx tells him to read the book and maybe tonight one of them will get horizontal. Dana picks the book back up as he walks away to suddenly reveal an image of Freddy with a decapitated head, which was exactly a promo shot from part three. Yeah.
Publicity still from Nightmare on Elm Street 3 just taped to the front of the book
cover. Which causes him to throw the book down. Suddenly, a pair of legs walk into the shot as he looks up to see Caitlin, who asks, doing a book report? Before walking off. Back in Dr. DeVry's office, Dana tells the doctor that every time he's with Caitlin, in reality, he acts like a dork, but in dreams, he doesn't have to worry about being a nerd.
Which I have to agree with, because you see, yeah, when he's around her, he's a geek.
Yeah.
Because, you know, any other time, as you've seen, he's clearly David Caruso from Jade.
Holy shit, a Jade reference. I love Jade.
I'm Enrique Cuto, motherfucker.
I'm just saying.
Of course I made a Jade reference.
I'm proud of
you. Who the fuck
do
you think you are?
Proud of you.
Thank you.
So, DeVry's asks him why not let his dreams run loose and turn them up to 11, adding teenagers are supposed to have an active fantasy life.
Yeah.
Dana adds that he worries that if he wound up with Caitlin, she'd be too much for him. The doctor tells Dana that he's afraid if he'll get her, and he's also afraid that he won't get her, adding that Dana has to make up his mind and decide what he wants. Later that night, we see Dana in bed reading the book, telling him that he has the power to get any girl, his ideal love mate. We see Caitlin back in the dream domain, now dressed in black short nighty. Dana comments that it's perfect, but wishes that she would wear the wardrobe of, or wishes that she wouldn't wear the wardrobe of the living dead.
Well, I just want to say before we get any further, I'm just happy, honestly, I'm just happy that he's reading a book and not just scrolling through TikTok watching Andrew Tate videos.
That's fair.
You know, I feel like that's at least he's learning in a way that's more academic.
There we go.
How to get girls.
He looks up to see Caitlin enter his room, commenting, easiest thing in the world to fix, as she removes her clothes, asking, how's that? Better? Dana looks forward with a huge grin while she asks if there's anything else he'd like her to change. Dana comments that he's always wondered what she'd look like as a blonde, as we are suddenly shown Caitlin with long blonde hair down to her breasts. Dana continues grinning as she bends down to him, crawling onto the bed and then onto him while licking her lips. She comments, no one wearing this many clothes can be comfortable, as she snaps her fingers, stripping Dana naked in a second. Dana looks over, shocked.
Well, I mean, how would you be if a girl snapped her fingers and you were suddenly naked?
Same way.
Also, boy, did he have a tan line.
Okay.
Wow. It was like there was a nuclear war going on under his pants, which maybe there was. But enough about your college days. Let's continue.
We cut back to Caitlin asking, is it something I said? As Dana panics, telling her they just need to wait. Suddenly, Nyx appears telling them, dude, you're not making Uncle Nicholas a proud puppy here. You're blowing it, pal. Suddenly, Dana's mother appears next to them, telling him she thinks it's time for his friend to leave, which causes Caitlin to comment, kiss off, mommy damnedest. He's mine.
And then a cigar appears.
Yes. So Dana's mother begins to state shock as we see Nyx lighting a huge cigar that is now in Caitlin's mouth. Caitlin puffs the cigar as Dana Mothers now has a gun drawn on her, stating that she's never heard such filth and is definitely not suited for her son.
So she's afraid
that Caitlin is going to have to eat a hollow point. And I love the way she said that.
She's going to have to eat a hollow point. But I mean, I would kill her, too, for lighting the cigar poorly. There's nothing wrong with lighting a cigar with a match. David, there's nothing wrong with lighting a cigar with a match.
I've lit cigars with matches, yes.
Well, yeah, you do a lot of stupid things.
That's true.
The secret to lighting a cigar with a match is it takes a lot of time.
Yes, it does.
You have to really gradually toast it around. Now, I'm going to talk about cigars for 25 more minutes.
That's fair.
She lit the cigar so poorly, but at least she didn't use a Zippo.
No, she did not use a Zippo. So Caitlin puffs the cigar as Dana's mother now has a gun drawn on her. I just read that.
You did.
Yeah.
At least you read it all.
So Caitlin takes another puff, commenting, "But back in the kitchen, mommy damnedest, I think something's burning." She then blows a huge cloud of smoke on Dana's mother, which sets her ablaze before she disappears right before our eyes. Dana makes a break for the bedroom door, exiting only to find Caitlin right outside the hall with red hair now.
Yes.
She comments, "Red's the color of lust, you know. Or maybe you don't know." Dana lays into her, stating that she's the color of insane and just inhaled his mom into a smoke ring.
Yeah, she like sucked all the smoke back out from the room and the mom was then gone. So I guess she inhaled her.
So he tries
which
to fumble.
Which you shouldn't inhale cigar smoke or people's mothers.
No, you shouldn't. Either one of those. No. So he tries to fumble with the door, but Caitlin grabs him, throwing him onto a granite slab, telling him they're going to make it happen. She begins to undo her dress, commenting, "Velcro just rips off when you're ready to rock and roll." Dana comes to, screaming in his bedroom, sitting up on his bed. He throws the book to the floor, but suddenly Caitlin enters again, telling him he didn't get to the part where it says opportunities are all around, commenting that he's scared to death, isn't he? Putting her fishnet legs onto the chair right in front of him, she comments on it really being his first time, but not to worry because she will do all the doing, which I like that too.
Do all the doing, like a Mountain Dew commercial.
Exactly. What? And this will be the stuff of dreams are made of. Suddenly, white flashes and Dana is back in the mortuary, now nude. He looks around confused as Caitlin comes into the shot and tells him she's going to have give him a helping hand as she brings up her hand that is now decked out in Freddy's glove as she goes in to grab his crotch.
Yes, she does. I mean, well, really, Freddy's going in to grab his crotch. And honestly, this is, I mean, at least he waited till the kid was 17.
That's fair.
I mean, that's pretty reasonable.
Dana lets out a scream of pain. We then see Dana's mother enter his room, telling him to wake up. She comes in commenting she doesn't like him doing things in there with the door shut, but stops as she sees Dana dead on his bed with his eyes wide open and the book resting on his chest. She begins to cry and scream as she runs out of the room. The A story ends as we cut to Freddy in his domain, reading the same book, who comments, "Oh, the first time you never forget. If you live," and then he laughs maniacally.
Well, and I want to say, I mean, I didn't think he was dead. I thought that was just his O-face.
Just his O-face.
Well, some people have, you know, like a coma O-face, you know?
Coma.
He was laying there. But I just want to say something.
Yes.
That sex was not safe at all.
No, it was not. It was not.
And I have a problem with that. Like when we went to see the Bradley Cooper film
Burnt and nothing
was burnt in a movie where it would be so easy to burn something.
You still haven't let that go.
Because it's still true, Louie.
You're not wrong. So that is the end of the A story. Henrik, would you like to explain the A story and B story?
So a lot of shows and movies have an A story and a B story, but Freddy's Nightmares is a little different for those uninitiated. Basically, every episode was a one-hour show, but in some areas, they only had half an hour time slots, and you would never want to leave money on the table, so the show was split in half in some areas. So that means you have two somewhat disjointed but vaguely related stories. Some episodes, it's very, very connected.
Yes.
Other episodes, I would say not so much.
Not so much.
But that's how it happens. So now we're about to take a massive shift. But unlike I think it was last week's episode, it's not going to be somebody who said like one line.
Yeah, no.
In the episode. So now, and of course, this is wonderful.
Oh, yes.
The young lady has become our lead.
Yes, she has. So the B story begins as we see mourners at Dana's funeral. We see Dana's mother and father exit, followed by others, including Nicholas and his girlfriend, Sookie, who is played by Christine Blackburn. She was in Amazing Stories in 1985.
Nice.
Day by Day in 89, Head of the Class, and also Doogie Howser. They're all looking somber, of course, because they're at a funeral.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, of course.
Nick comments that if this is all the people that are going to show up to remember him, he's not even going to bother dying, which I did like that line.
That's a great line, but can you blame them? Like, if the students showed up for every classmate who died's funeral, no one would be able to learn anything at Springwood High. No. They would be in class for, like, I don't know, 3 hours a week max.
If that.
Yeah.
Sookie comments, it's a school day, and Nick fires back with, God forbid we interrupt football practice. Both catch sight of Caitlin moving slowly outside, holding her sketchbook, as Nick comments, oh, it's Freddy Krueger's girlfriend, causing Sookie to ask, Freddy who? Nick tells Sookie about their meeting in the library and how Dana was hung up on her before excusing himself. He confronts Caitlin, asking her what she's doing there, adding, getting off on all the black clothing, a little death chic. Caitlin gives her condolences, but Nick isn't having it, mocking her that he's touched before grabbing the sketchbook from her, revealing a very detailed drawing of Freddy with a huge claw.
Whoa, I did not think you were going to say claw.
Claw? Yeah.
I thought, I'm just used to modern fan fiction.
Not surprised by it. Nick comments he should have known she'd bring her main squeeze to such a jolly social event. Asking her what she sees in a creep like Freddy, Caitlin tells Nick he doesn't even know and apologizes, turning to leave, but Nick grabs her. Caitlin tells him not to touch her, and Nick asks her if she's ever been touched by any guy with a pulse. Caitlin doesn't respond and walks off. Nick tells her to have a nice day as Sookie joins his side, asking if they can go now, and also tells him to stop staring at Caitlin as the two walk away.
I think Sookie and him, they're going to go the distance.
Oh, yeah.
They
yeah.
clearly 100%. Are not in a situationship.
No, not at all.
Yeah, if you're an elder millennial, enjoy Googling that.
We cut to a close-up of many candles and see the sketch of Freddy from Caitlin's art book as Freddy slashes through it, commenting, Boy meets girl. Girl wants Freddy. Freddy wants blood because I never go steady. I'm just not that kind of guy.
And this is the beginning of Freddy going back to his hip-hop and poetic roots.
Oh, the bride wore red. What a fantastic episode. We next see Caitlin now in Dr. DeVry's office telling her that that she cannot tell him anything about Fred Krueger he doesn't already know after dealing with multiple patients that were victims' parents he had to psychoanalyze.
Imagine that.
Yeah, crazy.
Strange.
He adds that it is her that he needs to know more about, adding he doesn't see any attraction and sees that and she seems perfectly normal young woman. He questions why she chooses to be an outcast, to which Caitlin responds that sunshine and sweetness just aren't on the menu, Doc. DeVries asks her if being normal scares her that much, and Caitlin gets defensive, stating it doesn't scare her at all. She adds that you need a little danger in your life to qualify as living. DeVry comments that danger is probably why she identifies with Fred Krueger. Back at Springwood High, Caitlin sits in the library as Nick approaches her table. Disgusted, she goes to get up and leave, but Nick tries to stop her, apologizing for his behavior at the funeral and for being rude. Caitlin asks where is his girlfriend, the gum chewer, which again...
Yeah, what a... Watermelon gum. What a
bitch.
But Nick responds that she's not his girlfriend. She's just, Caitlin interrupts, asking target of opportunity. Nick tries to defend himself, stating he came to apologize. Caitlin then apologizes that now she's being rude and also apologizes back to him. Nick starts to ask her out, but Caitlin interrupts him, telling him no, and it won't work, causing him to ask, what does she mean?
Now, I want to say,
yes,
I like this guy's swagger. I mean, your friend dies, and a day later, you ask his crush out. Solid.
That's solid.
I mean, that is... We can joke and laugh and stuff, but that is a bros over hoes kind of move.
That is indeed.
I mean, his bro is now dead, so he may move forward. He may go forth. I mean, that's in the guy handbook you were given, right?
The bro code?
The bro code book, yeah. I mean, well, because we're men, they just throw them really hard at you when you hit puberty.
That sounds about right.
It just hits you right in the side of the eye, like a Tremors the Series Christmas present.
Hey, that was my lip. Nick starts to ask her out, but Caitlin interrupts him, telling him it won't work out. Nick asks why. Caitlin tells him it's happened before, and it's always a disaster, stating she knows what people think of her. Nick mocks her, asking, is it because of Freddy? And Caitlin states she's not sick. She's not a twisto.
A twisto. Yeah, the twisto, they start calling people spuds.
Yeah.
It's quite an experience.
She goes on to state, in the world, there are wolves and there are sheep. And Fred Krueger was a predator, a wolf.
Nick, yeah. He was a predator.
He was a predator,
kids. Kids, I didn't even mean that.
Nick adds that he was also a psychopath, but Caitlin states he had power. Power to make people fear him, adding that she's seen how people look at her when she walks down the hall, and she wants that power.
I mean, just then go kill somebody. I don't know what they want. Like, he didn't just kill people. He killed children. That's like the easiest prey. I mean, come on.
Nick asks her what for, and Caitlin adds, better than being a sheep. Nick asks again, but Caitlin adds he's too young for her. Nick offers to go to the Overlook with her, and they'll just talk. No alcohol or anything, just talk.
Wow, she said you're too young for me. She does not know Freddy's work, clearly. That's like when Jesus walks up in that Woody Allen movie.
Oh, my God.
You clearly know nothing of my work.
Caitlin thinks for a second as Nick adds, don't be afraid. She looks at him and states that she's not afraid.
But then he uses the ultimate move.
Yes, he does.
He says, come on. Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Nick adds that he is, and because he likes her. And Caitlin tells him, maybe before leaving. Nick admires her backside as she walks away, then has a mini celebration and throws his hands up in the air.
And I got to say, I mean, he negged her pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hey, you're evil and no one likes you. Want to go out? I may approve of you someday.
That's how it goes.
I mean, that's the pickup artist mentality. You knock a girl down a few pegs and then she somehow dates Dave. What now?
You're an all-star.
Get your game on.
Go play.
All right. Show's canceled. We're out of here.
We are next inside Caitlin's home as we pan the walls, seeing many macabre decorations and pieces adorning the walls. She lights a candle and sits on her bed, going back to her drawing of Freddy and listening to the radio. The music ends and a DJ comes on, stating that they have a request. This one's for Caitlin, the girl with the funny name, the lady shunned by any guy with good sense. I say the femme with the mostest, who damn well better not try to change her depressing, morbid life by stepping out with the lame, no-nuck spud boy, Nicholas. Because if she does, she'll be one dead meat chick. Here's Do My Will or Else by the Janitors of Anarchy, a special request for Caitlin with love from Freddy.
Whoa.
Yeah, I wrote that whole fucking thing down.
I noticed, because there's no way you could have remembered it.
I tried. Caitlin looks up in shock as the camera zooms in on the radio playing. Caitlin is then back in Dr. DeVry's office telling him about the dedication. The doctor comments he's seen this sort of thing before, but Caitlin argues that he doesn't understand because it didn't start out until Nicholas asked her out. DeVry states that she's blocking, knowing the history of Freddy is causing her to fight against the idea of a perfectly normal date. He adds the auditory hallucinations will be followed by visual hallucinations, which will seem just as real. He adds she can get stuck in her own fantasy world if she doesn't start acknowledging the real world, stating that Freddy has become her own personification of self-doubt.
Oh.
He is dropping knowledge.
I know it.
Caitlin asks, how did it turn out for the patient of the previous similar case he's seen? DeVry stays silent while writing on his pad, not trying to acknowledge her question.
That silence means children died.
Yes, it does. Next, we see Nick and Sookie making out in the library. Sookie stops him, telling him not to be so grabby at fear of being seen. He replies that they're in the Asian culture section and no one ever comes back here.
Take that, Asia!
Sookie pushes him off her, stating he's not going to be the first, buckaroo. See you in biology as she walks away. Disgusted, Nick chases after her, pulling out the book and throwing it aside, fed up. Caitlin comes from behind and says hi. He greets her, asking her if they're still on for the Overlook tonight. Caitlin, dressed in a large coat, begins to undo it, stating, why wait till tonight? As she reveals herself dressed up in a studded bra and lingerie, Nick gulps in disbelief and grins as she approaches him, telling him she can't wait till tonight.
And I just want to say, all I wanted from that scene, yeah. I mean, other than what I already got, which is the studded underwear thing, was that when the coat dropped, I wanted to hear like the coat fall and then hear somebody go, shh. That was what I was waiting for. Shh.
So we suddenly cut to Nick, who's bound to a spinning torture wheel, spread and arms and legs, arms and legs spread out. She approaches him, holding up a straight razor, commenting, I've got you right where I want you. Nick panics, asking, what the hell is this? Caitlin mocks him, stating he can be smarter than that with all his snide comments like Miss Gravewave and Wicked Witch of the West as she runs the razor.
Wicked Witch of the Midwest.
Runs the razor lightly across his face. Nick apologizes that he didn't mean it, stating he thinks she's incredibly attractive. Caitlin tells him it's a big night for the first Caitlin tells him it's a big night for first, as it's his time for his first shave. It'll make him a man after all.
Oh yeah.
Nick comments he'd really rather not, but Caitlin goes to cutting his clothes off from his body. Nick starts to repent, stating he has no problem remaining a virgin, but Caitlin interrupts. It's too late for what he wants. Nick is now tied shirtless on the wheel as Caitlin comments that he and others think she's some kind of black magic pervert, telling him to look at himself and ask who has the power now and who's the freak now.
Now, he's awfully scared, but, you know, a lot of men would pay good money for this.
They would.
Especially with Miss Teen USA.
1983,
baby.
He apologizes again, but Caitlin tells him sorry is all he's ever been, and now it's time to take the big spin on the wheel of misfortune. She adds that she's afraid she has to cancel their date as she has a previous engagement. She then spins the wheel, sending Nicholas spinning, which it stops upside down. Suddenly, an upside down Freddy comes into view, shaming Nicholas as he spins him right back up, commenting, "All dressed up and nowhere to die." He laughs as he gives the wheel another spin, extending the blades of his claw out as blood and gore splash out from Nick. Caitlin suddenly wakes up, coming to, waking up on her bed, realizing it was all a dream.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Did she wake up coming to or wake up coming to?
Coming to.
That did. Okay, let's
wakes
move
up
on.
Coming to. We're yeah, moving yeah, it's fine. She comments, "Too much, much too much," adding, "Jealousy? I would have never expected that from you," as she flips from her drawing of Freddy to another page in her sketchbook where, written in blood in all caps, it just says, "Oh yeah."
I am starting to think that none of the sex in this is going to be safe. I just wanted to lay that out.
I just like that Freddy just wrote, "Oh yeah."
Oh yeah. Well, he was kind of the Kool-Aid man when he sucked Johnny Depp into the
That's
bed.
That's very, you know? Fair.
I would pay good money to see Freddy bust through a wall. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Kids love Kool-Aid.
She touches the words and brings back her hand with blood when suddenly the phone rings. Caitlin answers it but says nothing as she hears Nick's voice. She asks who it is as we see Nick talking to her on a payphone. She states she thought it might be someone else, and Nick adds, "It might be someone else," stating you're never alone with a schizophrenic. He asks her about the Overlook again, but Caitlin asks where he got her number, and Nick states it was in the phone book. Caitlin apologizes, stating he's a really nice guy, but there's something she's got to take care of first. He offers to help her and come over, but Caitlin tells him she can't and she shouldn't even be talking to him. She disconnects the phone from the wall as the camera zooms into a skull on her shelf.
Well, which is not shocking or a startle. I mean, that's just her decor.
That's just decor.
Yeah.
The next day, Caitlin is back in DeVry's office telling him about the sketchbook and the blood. The doctor states that this is part of the hallucinations he said would follow, but Caitlin argues it was real blood, real enough to stain her sheets. He states it's possibly a stigmata then. And
Stigmata! Stigmata.
Stigmata.
So I know do you think maybe he got himself confused? He's not Dr. DeVry. He just got his medical diploma from DeVry. Because
stigmatas only occur when you walk into a church, right?
Oh my fucking God.
No, I'm
David.
Being dead serious.
No. Stigmata is experiencing the bloody palms, yeah, or bloody wrists of the crucifixion.
Yes.
It doesn't happen at a church. It just happens if you're supposedly chosen.
It happened in the movie Stigmata in a church. You ever seen Stigmata?
First of all, I think I've watched Stigmata with you.
Did we?
A long time ago.
Probably, yeah. I used to have the Blu-ray and then I watched it.
All I'm saying, and please do not be cruel to our Nightmare on Elm Street 3 alumni who were in horror movies that may not have been that good at the beginning of the century, but Stigmata is the representation of the passion,
yeah,
of Christ. And what kind of doctor? Oh, well, if there's real blood, like it would have... You have to say something so... Hold on. You have to say something so stupid that I would prefer and be less bothered if you said, well, maybe you just got your period. Like, that would have been less insulting somehow.
Somehow, yeah.
Somehow.
Oh, my God. So the doctor, the doctor says it might be a stigmata, which clearly it's not.
Yeah, it might be a stigmata.
Adding, she thought Freddy and her were alike, but in her dream, she just wanted to scare Nicholas away, but Freddy killed him. The doctor states that this is just her fear taking over again, and this is just her interpretation of Freddy, and that if she wants him out of her dream, she has the power to do it herself.
Yeah, or maybe it's just the Loch Ness Monster. Maybe it's that's his next thing. He's like, maybe it's the Loch Ness Monster. You know, I was crossing my fingers. No joke. I was crossing my fingers when the therapist was talking. I was like, oh, come on. Come on. Be like, have you tried taking all your power you ever gave him away?
Oh my God.
He'd be nothing. He'd be shit.
If only. If only. Caitlin adds that she will probably dream about him again tonight, and the doctor fires back, with all means, dream him. It'll help her push that thing out all the way to its conclusion and be done with it, because that's what you want when you're having nightmares of Freddy. Just dream about him.
Well, I mean, I am an adult in Springwood, so you probably just need a good night's sleep. Here, have some sleeping pills.
The doctor fires back that all means for her to dream him. She thanks Dr. DeVries, stating that she knows what has to be done as she leaves. We next see Caitlin back at home reading a Fundamentals of Dreaming programming book before she throws it aside, stating, okay, Mr. Fred Krueger, let's see if you can handle Miss Caitlin. Time to grow up.
Yeah, I didn't get the time to grow up part necessarily.
I didn't either, because now he's not going to be interested in her.
Yeah, well, but maybe that's actually what she was getting
at. Maybe that's what it is.
Is he only wants to kill kids, at least when he was corporeal.
She takes a pill and lays back with another drawing of Freddy on her sketch pad resting on her chest. The camera pans along the front of a blue convertible parked at what we can only assume is a dream version of the Overlook.
But it wasn't a Tokyo convertible.
It was not a Tokyo convertible.
I wanna be your Tokyo convertible. I wanna get next to you. I just love going through the motions. I just love going through the motions.
I was wondering how long you were gonna go.
I wanna be your love. What? We have not had a chance to reference Slumber Party Massacre 2 in 20-some episodes.
That is fair. That is very fair.
I got it done because you weren't.
Because I wasn't getting the job done.
You weren't getting it done, pal!
Caitlin sits parked in the car, listening to the radio, looking around nervously. The music ends and the DJ once again comes on, saying, so much for the tune, now for the scene of our town. Over at Springwood High today, the unstoppable Red and Green scooped up another 6 promising young lives in agony and disfigurement, making the score Grim Reaper 640, Springwood High 0.
Well, and at first I was like, and then I remembered that that's how they report sports games. Yes. They would say the team colors.
Yep.
So go Freddy, he's our man. If he can't do it, he'll kill you in your dreams and die for real.
She goes to turn off the radio, but suddenly gets her finger slashed as she takes it back to see a large cut pouring blood. The radio fires back up with a suicide update, but Caitlin kicks it off with her feet. The seatbelt then suddenly buckles itself, trapping her as she goes to grab it and gets another cut. She comments, okay, wise ass, if I can get this thing started, I'm out of here. She goes to start the car, but gets another cut, freaking out and screaming that that she's not afraid of a little blood when suddenly the windshield shatters.
Well, yeah, I would.
Taking a second, she looks around when suddenly a cop appears before her, asking if she's having trouble and commenting on the way that she's dressed. Commenting on the way she's dressed, Caitlin comments she's supposed to be meeting someone. The cop doesn't believe her and begins to make his way around the car.
Yeah, he's like, what kind of person would meet you? And my first thought was, any male human would probably gladly meet her at a makeout point. Maybe I'm just drunk.
So he comments on the way she's dressed. He doesn't believe her and begins to make his way around the car, asking what kind of person she's going to have a rendezvous with at this time of night in the dark.
It's pronounced rendezvous. It's pronounced rendez-sous-vis. Yes, rendez-sous-vis.
Caitlin goes to explain, but the cop interrupts her, asking if it's her vehicle, also requesting the registration. Caitlin comments that she doesn't have any as the cop draws his gun, telling her to keep her hands on the wheel and climb out slowly for a little poke and pat.
Which, I mean, look, I've fallen for that a couple times in my life, but my thing is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 17 times in 1 month.
Oh my God.
Shame on you.
Yeah. That's fair. That's totally fair. I think we need to talk after
this. I have been hurt.
I'm not ready for that. Keeping his gunpoint on her the entire time, Caitlin tells the cop she can't as the seatbelt won't come undone. The cop holsters his weapon, offering to help her with the seatbelt, when suddenly he transforms into Freddy right before her eyes,
more
stating,
than meets the eye.
Sorry, I'm late. As he hops into the car, he sits next to her, grabbing her head, asking, still love me? Let's make mouth music, baby. As he extends his tongue, going in for a kiss, Caitlin fights, but it's no use as Freddy hops onto her. We then see Nick trying to call her, but only having the ringer sound before hanging up, stating the phone book doesn't have her address. He realizes she walks to school as we cut to the exterior of her house with police and ambulances out front. Inside, Caitlin lays deceased on the couch as the coroner zips her up. Nick enters asking what happened, stating she's a friend. The med tells him that she died due to a heart failure from an overdose of barbiturates. Nick approaches the body as the coroner comments, chalk up another death, junkie, self-mutilation and everything.
And he's like, I love this. Yeah, is great.
He's taking pictures like it's a fashion shoot.
Such a good time.
Nick asks about the self-mutilation and the coroner tells him to check it out as he pulls the bag down from Caitlin's chest, exposing bloody slices in her flesh that read, oh, yeah, Caitlin and Freddy forever,
which is romantic, at least. I mean, it's kind of charming in its own way.
Shocked and sickened, Nick wipes his brow in horror and leaves the room as the camera pans over to Caitlin's sketch pad, which now has a drawing of Freddy from before, but now shows that the sketch is Freddy driving his claws into Caitlin's chest.
And I just want to say, we finally, David,
yes,
have a pickup line that works.
What is that?
Let's make mouth music, baby.
That is a good one.
That one'll do it.
That is a good
one. Like, people are going to get pregnant after they hear this show.
The episode ends as we cut back to Freddy, who swipes wiping out a set of candles, commenting, remember, if love is the drug, just say no. And that, my friends, is episode season 1, episode 22, Safe Sex.
And the wrapping up
of season one
of Freddy's Nightmares.
Oh boy, man.
And I have to say, what an experience.
Yes,
that is.
That is indeed.
I was very, very floored by that one. Oh no. He's coming right up here. Okay. Dave, you okay? You ready?
I'm good. I'm good. He's taking his time getting up here.
Well, he's limping for some reason.
Why is he limping?
I don't know, man. I don't get it. Okay. Fred, could you get into the microphone?
I am at the microphone, bitch.
God.
Let me tell you something. I really appreciate everything you've done for me.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, because you kids have really brought some of my best work to light.
Have we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Freddy's Nightmares.
Well, yes.
It's what got me my SAG card. It's what got me my other card.
Okay.
We don't need to talk about that.
Yeah, we don't. No, we don't.
But I just wanted to say thank you guys for doing every episode of the series.
You're welcome, Freddy.
No, there's a whole other season.
Yeah, we have a whole other season.
No, there's not. There's one season, and then we got canceled. That's why Bob Shea never paid me.
Oh. Wait,
Bob Shea never paid you?
No, he never did.
Huh.
No, there was a second season, Freddy.
Yeah. There's another 22 episodes.
No, there was not. Because yes. I would have been paid.
I don't know what to tell you about that, my friend.
Oh, God.
I think Bob Shea stiffed you.
Yeah, I'm about to stiff him. All night long.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
So, Freddy, for an episode, you know, called Safe Sex, you had, like, no safe sex in this episode at all.
No, I raw dogged that entire thing.
Yes, you did.
So, before I go, I did rhyme on the episode, and as you know, I'm very, very musically and poetically inclined.
You are, yes.
So... Here goes.
Okay.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Oh, God.
Whose dick was so long, I killed him in his dreams and he died for real.
Oh, that took a turn.
I was very jealous about how large his penis was.
As one would be.
Well, Freddy, do you have any pickup lines, maybe?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. nice shoes, want to die in your dreams and you die for real?
That one's That's kind of creative.
Creative.
Hey, did it hurt?
Did what hurt? I'm doing the girl voice.
Yeah, I noticed.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, no problem. You're literally threatening me.
Yeah, I am.
Okay, go on, Freddy.
When you fell from heaven and into my domain of hell. Unrelated to everything we've talked about.
Yes, Freddy.
Do you have Bob Shea's phone number?
I don't have it on me at this time, no.
I have his address.
No shit?
No, why would I have Bob Shea's address?
How did you get Bob Shea's address?
The last time I had his address was when he paid me some residuals when they made Lord of the Rings.
Oh, God.
All right, I'm out of here. You guys are stupid.
All right.
But remember, if there's 22 more episodes, that means we get to spend more time together.
Yeah, we do, don't we? Bye, Freddy.
Yeah, see you later, Freddy.
I don't know what just happened.
What do you mean?
I mean,
it seemed pretty cut and dry.
Cut and dry, yeah.
Get it? Because he has claws with blades.
So that means that when he comes on for the next few episodes, he's not going to have any idea what we're talking about, probably.
Well, half the time he doesn't know.
That's very true, too. That's very true, too.
You got to remember, that was the 80s. He was on. That was his, like, height of cocaine. Obviously, I think we could all agree it peaked at Freddy's Dead. Freddy's cocaine use.
I love that movie.
So, okay, so we're wrapping up the first season of the series. And we're hoping, maybe next week, maybe not, that we're going to have some surprises. We have a pretty big one that we're working on right now.
Yes, we do.
It would be getting what I would call the whale.
Yeah.
That we didn't even know really about.
No.
We're working on that. I think we're going to do a couple of bonus shows in general before we start into the next season to kind of give us a little bit of a break.
Yeah, we're going to try to do we are going to do a wrap up season one episode. We're going to pick our top five favorite episodes to start. Probably go into a little bit more detail about some of the writers and stuff on the show that we didn't get to in the episodes. So we're going to do a wrap up season one and give you all the good stuff that you may have
missed. What that means is Dave is going to do all of that.
I'm
going to
do a lot of work.
And I will just have the studio.
You have to pick five episodes.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so rating. What do you grade this?
Oh, man. This is, you know, I'm gonna say that this is an A episode, in my opinion. I had such a blast with this. It's so fucking strange, but man, this is so much fun. Freddy is top tier in this. The stories both mixed very well together, and also knowing some of the stuff that was cut out of the episode that we'll
yeah, which
see.
We'll talk about yes. that soon. Yeah.
This episode just shot for the moon and nailed it, in my opinion. So I'm giving this an A.
Yeah, this episode's kind of peak.
Yeah, no, it is.
But, you know, I do want to say, it's been a long journey.
It really has, yeah.
Watching one of these almost every single week.
Every single week, yeah.
And releasing a show every single week. We've had so many experiences, like, the Beefy Boy episode feels like a really long time ago.
It does. I was thinking about that today, actually.
Yeah, like, and some of those episodes were just great, but this one...
Did you say Beefy Boy?
Oh, yeah, David's wearing the Beefy Boy t-shirt. You can get it at freddysnightmares.com. You can see it if you're on our Patreon. One more plug, the video version of the show is now available at Patreon. So just go to freddysnightmares.com, our website, can't believe that was available, and click on Patreon. If you're at the $2 tier or higher, you get to watch the show, and we may end up doing some episodes live streamed exclusively on Patreon. We'll see about that. Yeah. We haven't made all of our decisions. Honestly, doing the video version was kind of a surprise.
It's been awesome.
But anyway, so I'm going to give it an A as well.
Okay.
Only because I don't want to give out an A+ until I've seen almost everything.
That's fair. That's
I may never give an A+. We'll see.
And I will also add that it has been brought to our attention that season two, in regards of its release, has sequel to their episodes. So each episode has a sequel to it. Now, the way they're on Tubi, they don't run like that. So it's going to be kind of like a Sister's Keeper situation.
They run like they were aired, right?
Yes, they run like they were aired. They were aired in a weird order, yes.
Right, right.
So we are going to watch them in the order they are on Tubi, which means our first episode of Season 2 will be Season 2, Episode 1, Dreams Come True, directed by George Katzender, who did Bride War Red and Black Tickets. And Freddy-centric episode.
Oh, it's well, of course, they got to open with Freddy-centric.
And apparently he's super sinister from what I've heard in this episode.
Well, I'm excited about that.
I know. Yes.
So before we go, anything else you want to say?
I think I'm good on this.
Okay. I do want to say real quick, thank you to everybody who's helped out with Chicano's medical fund. I spent almost $10,000 on Chicano's chemotherapy and stuff like that. Big thank you to the folks who've donated. We could use more help. Any amount really does help. Just go to helpchicano.com, H-E-L-P-C-H-I-C-A-N-O. Anything helps. I really do appreciate it. Also, I appreciate kind words and things like that. And if you love what we've been doing here, Patreon's a great way to support, but a free way you can make the show better is just go on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a rating.
Yes.
Leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you listen, and it will increase the likelihood that random Fredheads may find the show. And then maybe, just maybe, they'll learn to love Freddy's Nightmares like we have.
Yes, they will. And if you want to follow the official Instagram of the show, you can go to David's Watching Movies Again on Instagram, and that is where we have all our promos up, and also you get to see the stuff that Henrik and I watch in our spare time as well.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a promise. So now, my friends, it's almost weird to know the first season.
The first season's wrapped, I know. It's so strange.
So, but we're going to get out of here. So thank you all so much for watching and listening. And remember, you can email us, you can reach out and cut someone at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. All of our information available at freddysnightmares.com. And until next time, I'm going to get out of here and go rest. I desperately need it.
I think you do.
And do I look tired? You didn't even notice I got a haircut.
Oh, it looks nice.
Oh, thanks. I like to lie. All right, we'll see you guys next time. We can't wait. So stay spooky.